So today we have with us the famous astrophysics YouTuber, Dr. Becky. Hello.
Hello. I like how I'm the famous YouTuber astrophysicist. I've never been described like that before, but I'll take it.
No, you're totally famous. You're more famous than our organization, so famous for us. So firstly, what would you like to be called? Like Dr. Becky, Becky, Dr. Smethurst?
Becky's fine. Yeah, Becky's fine.
Okay. So Becky, what inspired your interest in the subject?
I was what I like to call a why child. Like I was one of those kids that was just like, why this? Why that? Why this? I probably drove my parents insane. And a lot of questions I had were questions about the stars and the sky and the world around me. And often my parents couldn't answer those questions. And so I ended up, you know, going down to the library and like reading as many books as I could get my hands on and just devour as much information as possible, basically. And I don't think I ever lost that curiosity to know more information. And eventually, you know, you start asking questions that no one knows the answer to, right? And a book or the internet or your teacher can't tell you. And at that point, that's when you start doing research, when you start answering it yourself. And so I realized that that's really what I wanted to do for my job, was to do research into space.
That's very inspiring. Like, that is inspiring for me as well. So as a teenager, like, did you want to be in astrophysics since you were a teenager, since you were a child?
No. So I always knew I wanted to do something with science. Like if you'd ask me, I'd always be something to do with science. So when I was about 9 or 10, I was obsessed with dolphins. And so I knew I wanted to be a marine biologist. And I was like, I want to go study dolphins and blah, blah, blah. And my mom told me that I couldn't do that in the UK, not thinking that I could, you know, move abroad. And so I was like, oh, okay, maybe not. And then I wanted to be like a medical doctor for a while, like a surgeon. What? But I just realized the thing that fascinated me the most was space, and it always had done. And so eventually when I was about 16, 17, that's when I realized that, you know, that's what I wanted to study all the time. You know, it was the homework that I picked off the top of the pile. You know, when you have a pile of homework and you're like, yeah. Oh, well, I'll do that first because that might be fun. You know, I realized that that was what I wanted to keep studying, you know, at university and beyond if I could. So as a teenager, yeah, I wasn't quite sure yet, but I got there eventually.
No, but from like a marine biologist to an astrophysicist, that's like a wild change in field.
Yeah, it is quite a wild change. But at the same time, if you think about it, you know, the ocean, we don't know a lot about the ocean, and in terms of especially the bottom of the ocean, it's almost as many mysteries as space itself. And in a way, there are a lot of odd connections between marine biology and astrophysics. So for example, whale sharks that have those spots sort of like polka dots on them, right? They're individual to every single whale shark. And the algorithm that marine biologists use to identify an individual whale shark, and so from an image of a whale shark, you know, which one is it, sort of triangulates all the position of all the dots, is the same algorithm that astrophysicists developed to figure out, if you give it an image of the sky, where are you on the sky? Wow. So there's weird crossovers between so many different sciences. And I think that's one thing I love, is that you never know where your day might take you with science, you know?
Yeah, wow. I had no idea that there was there was some connection between marine biology and astrophysics. No idea. Okay, so what's the coolest thing you learned in astrophysics?
Oh, coolest thing I've ever learned. I mean, it's always got to be the scales of things, like how big things actually are. And the one thing that I always love to hear is, so there's a supermassive black hole at the center of every single galaxy, right? Mm-hmm. And some of them are growing. But if you chuck too much material onto a black hole, it sort of burps up the material. It doesn't actually go into the black hole. It's before it gets to the black hole. It's sort of from the material around it that's jostling to sort of get eaten by the black hole. It ends up doing this big burp of like what we call a jet. And I had the scale of this whole system described to me as, if the galaxy of 100 billion stars was the size of a grain of sand, then the supermassive black hole in the center would be the size of an atom. And the jets that it can spew out from this process of growing can extend across your entire palm.
Okay.
And like, wow. That is just like, yeah. Like the scale that something so tiny could make like, what? Yeah. You know,
that is like gigantic.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that is like by far the coolest thing I have learned as well now. So is there someone you would owe your scientific interest to?
No, there's never like an individual person. I think I was all, because I was such a curious child and my parents nurtured that, they didn't tell me to just stop asking questions or whatever, you know, they nurtured that. I guess I have them to thank, but there was no like one person that I looked up to when I was younger. I think during my PhD, I looked up to Professor Jocelyn Bell Burnell, or Dame Professor Jocelyn Bell Burnell, as we should give her correct title, who discovered pulsars during her PhD, mm-hmm. and has gone on to have this incredible career, doing incredible things for women in science as well, and minorities in science too. And you know, she's just such an incredible woman that when I got to my PhD, I was finally like, oh, I think I finally have a role model, like someone I actually want to sort of aspire to be. So yeah, that was nice.
Okay, amazing. So you're, like I said, you're one of the most popular astrophysics channels on YouTube. Can you tell us what made you start? Yeah, you are. Can you tell us what made you start creating these videos?
So I have always loved to chat to people about science, especially when they're very curious, but don't necessarily have years worth of education to mm-hmm. back up that curiosity. Because there's a difference between like being intelligent and being educated, right? Yeah. Educated means you've spent years and years in school. Intelligent means, you know, you can teach things and you can see things that different people can't, and you can retain information and all this kind of stuff. And there's a lot of people that don't have access to that, you know, or people that at school didn't care, but as they got older, realized that they were interested in all this stuff. And then they had all these questions and who do you ask? And so I really wanted to be like your friendly neighborhood astrophysicist, the person that you could ask, like, how does when you fall into a black hole, or like what was before the Big Bang and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so I'd always been sure that I wanted to do research, but at the same time, like give back to, you know, the people who were paying for my research, yeah. which is taxpayers, by doing what we call outreach in the sciences. Mm-hmm. And then as part of sort of you finishing up your PhD, you apply for what we call a postdoc. So this is mm-hmm. a 2 to 3 year position that you do after your PhD. And you do a couple of those before you become a permanent member of staff, a professor, right? And the one that I applied for straight out of PhD was one at Nottingham. And they have a very popular 60 symbols on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And the position was basically like, come to research with us, but come make YouTube videos too. And I was like, that sounds like loads of fun. Like I could, yeah, totally chat about science on YouTube. And then after 2 years, when that finished, I was like, well, I don't want to stop doing this. And I moved on to, you know, in another 2 to 3 year position at Oxford. I was like, I'll set up my own channel and see how it goes. And here we are, like, oh, what even is it? Like, 2 years later, 2 and a bit years later, which is crazy to me. I can't believe I've been doing this for 2 years. It feels like yesterday that I started my channel. So.
Well, you're doing an amazing job at it, honestly. So actually, I found your channel, you know, when I was just scrolling through YouTube and in the wee hours of night.
The endless scroll that we all get lost in.
Yeah, and I found the video of how does Mercury's orbit prove general relativity? And I was mm-hmm. I was very intrigued, and I was like, yeah, I just gotta click on that video. So I was so amazed with how, you know, with the simplicity you explain such a complex phenomenon, actually. Mm. So how important do you think STEM communication is? Because essentially you are communicating the mumbo jumbo of science to maybe people who are just maybe not that educated, or not that I can't find the right word for it actually.
Yeah, just don't have that the sort of educational background to dive into it themselves, but are so curious, you know, like I could. So between physicists, you know, Mercury's orbit proved general relativity, I'd just show them a page of equations and you'd be like, oh yeah, cool, like that's our language, right? Yeah. But someone who doesn't know that language and doesn't know to communicate it, like that's not fair to deprive them of how cool it is that Mercury's orbit proves general relativity, right? Or is a proof of general relativity anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I always wanted to do that, to communicate it in different ways. And like you say, it is a little bit difficult because you're trying to literally translate from the maths to, you know, normal language. But at the same time, there's so much that you kind of have to know before you can then get to that line of the maths that you want to explain. So there's one person I always have in mind, and it's my mum. And I'm like, if my mum understands this, then everyone else should hopefully also understand. And so that's who I've always got in mind. And I'm thinking like, okay, I need to explain this. So, but to understand that, they'll need to explain this and then this and then this and then this. So I just break it down like that. And I think it's just so important because I know how many people are curious and I know how frustrating it is to be told like no, you will never understand that. Or like, you're not smart enough to understand that, or you don't know this, so you can't understand that. Like, that would frustrate me so, so much. And so I don't want anyone to ever feel like that. So I'm like, you know, if I can get into STEM communication and help people understand, and then also maybe inspire young kids or teenagers that don't know that language yet, but are hoping to know it one day, to understand like how cool it would be if you did know that language, you know? Yeah. So.
Because, you know, I see your videos and they've got these fun animations and pop songs that the video I watched contained an Avril Lavigne song, and I'm like, hell yeah, that is what I want to watch, that is what I connect with. So you know, is there, would you say that your content is targeted more towards the youth?
I don't think so. Like, I remember when I started doing outreach, like on stage and stuff like that, that people do like little science shows or stuff like that. People were like, you're so enthusiastic, you'd be great in front of kids. And I'm like, why does enthusiasm just mean like young kids? Like, adults quite like a dose of enthusiasm too, right? They like to watch something that's both informative and fun. And so I target them at myself. I was like, if I at 15 or 16 was what, or even at 25 and hadn't become an astrophysicist, or 35 and hadn't become an astrophysicist, this is the video I'd want to watch. Like, I'd want all of the meme references, all of the jokes. Like, these are the things that when I'm filming, so I cut this bit out actually, I'll film and I'll say something that reminds me of, say, a lyric in an Avril Lavigne song, and I'll say it and I'll sing it then and there, because that's what I do in real life. It's like a conversation between me and my sister, you know, your sibling, that you're just like, you have so many in jokes and references that you make. I can put those in, but in like song clips and TV and film clips and memes and stuff. And like, I just chuck them in because that's what's going through my head. And I think it surprises people. And it also gives people a bit of a break from the heavy physics as well. Yeah. So it gives their brain a moment to go, okay, wait, what were we talking about? So I'm literally just doing like the inner monologue that I have, that happens to be broken up by Avril Lavigne songs occasionally.
Okay, great. So how long does it take you to make a video? And could you maybe walk us through that process?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, it's just coming up with the idea, and that happens quite sort of, you know, casually throughout my general day, whether I'm making tea or whether I'm making lunch or, you know, something like that. And then obviously once the idea is had, I'll put it on my big list of ideas, and then I'll start scheduling them for sort of, I'll do a month in advance. I'll be like, okay, cool, that's next month or whatever. And then I will prep the video, which usually takes about an hour or two, depending how well I know the subject. Like, if it's something that I research, I'm just like, I need to hit all of these points. If it's not, I'll have to read a couple of papers, look up some stuff. So that can take a bit longer. My Night Sky News videos, which are like a recap of everything that's been going on in space news in the past month, do tend to take a bit longer, because obviously that's everything that's been happening in space news. So yeah, prep maybe between an hour and 4 hours, depending. And then I'll film for about an hour for like a 15 minute video or so, maybe a half an hour video if it's an hour, I guess, because I make lots of mistakes. I have to go back as the bloopers at the end often show. And then, the edit is the bit that I hate the most after that. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just because I'm editing myself, and that is just horrible to like hear your own voice and I just don't find it fun. But that can usually take a couple of hours again, depending on how long the video is. And so I balance this around my like work day. So when I used to actually leave the house before COVID, I would do all this sort of on my commute. I had an hour commute and I would get on the train and I'd do it all then. Now I've sort of started doing it in the evening, sort of finishing work a bit earlier, around 4:30, and doing it for an hour or so then. And yeah, it's just all about balance, you know, sort of kind of like my hobby that I do sort of on the side of my day-to-day research, I guess.
Amazing. So I would say that that's like a 12-hour process, if I'm not overestimating.
Yeah, I mean, a short video, probably more like 6 to 8, a longer video, probably more like 10 to 12, yeah.
Wow, that is, I can't even imagine the hard work you do to teach us.
It's not too bad. It's about an hour a day and I enjoy it, you know, so.
Okay, I think then that the feeling of enjoyment is mutual between you and the viewers.
Oh, good. That's good to know. Yeah.
Okay, so what advice would you give to young and budding scientists?
Yeah, just have as many opportunities as you can to learn more. So whether that might be through reading a book or joining a society, if there's something around you, like a society at school, or if that's like a local, so for example, like a local astronomical society, if you're into space. I would also massively recommend people to learn to code, because I don't think there's many science careers at the minute where we don't code something up, whether that's data analysis or making a plot or making a model or doing some statistics. That's all done using computer code. Something like Python would be great for people starting out. I wish I'd learned Python earlier. I didn't learn it until I got to university, and I would have fared much better if I'd learned it at school, like during a summer holiday or something. And yeah, if you can get some form of like a summer student placement in some form of research or something like that, or even if it's not directly in a university, if it's in industry or something like that, it's still sort of science or engineering adjacent, something like that, like that would always look great. But the main thing is just, you know, keep that passion that you obviously have. If you love science, you know you love science, right? And then so if you're applying for universities or applying for a job, people want to see that passion come out. And so yeah, always make sure that shows.
Amazing. So, you know, you said that this video thing is sort of like a hobby for you, but I'm just going to go ahead and ask this question. What do you enjoy doing in your free time?
So I really enjoy like hiking and walking and swimming. I'm a big swimmer because of the marine biology, probably, because I also love scuba diving when you could travel previously. But yeah, like we'd love to travel, and I always love to be at weekends, like seeing friends and family somewhere else. So it's been weird, COVID, like sort of taking that away, but it's nice to be at home. I also do a lot of DIY now, like in the house, like painting walls and all sorts. And yeah, I've gotten really into it. I made this table behind me, like really into DIY.
Brilliant.
And also nail polish as well. What, at least once or twice a week, like you'll find me painting my nails.
Oh gosh, okay, that is amazing. You're having like quite a ball even in COVID, I think.
Yeah, you gotta find ways to keep yourself cheerful and pass the time productively, you know.
So. Yeah. What is your favorite movie or TV show and why?
I don't even know like what I would pick. So the film I probably have watched the most that isn't a Christmas film is probably A Knight's Tale with Heath Ledger, because it's just hilarious, and it's my, like, I'll watch it once a year because I just have to, like, it's just one of those films that brings me joy. But I think one of the, like, the best films, like, that still sticks with me is just the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I think it was at the right age when that came out, so just become obsessed with it, and it's never left me. I think it's fantastic. TV.
I think this question,
like, for nostalgia, Friends. Like, okay. I don't know. Like, I've used to stump me so much. I mean, if I had to pick some sort of sci-fi thing, I don't actually watch a lot of sci-fi, weirdly. Everyone thinks being into space, I would do, but like, I was always like, well, space can make anything cooler than Hollywood and sci-fi can make.
Oh, God.
I actually read more than I watch TV.
Okay, so. Who's your favorite author? What's your favorite book then?
I really enjoy a lot of Brandon Sanderson stuff. So I loved his Mistborn series. And I really enjoyed recently the Reading series by Pierce Brown, which is a bit of sci-fi, but it's like sci-fi fantasy crossover, because it's kind of like sci-fi where humans have colonized the solar system, but society's now organized like ancient Rome. It's really cool. It sounds weird, but it's really cool.
Okay, I will check that out then, definitely. Okay, last question. Do you, do you have some favorite YouTube channel that you just watch all the time? Except for yours, of course.
A lot of the YouTube channels I watch are renovation or DIY channels for homes, actually. But if they wouldn't be, Simone Geertz's channel, that's not how you pronounce her last name. I can never remember how you actually pronounce her last name because it's Swedish. But Simone Geertz's Shitty Robots channel is amazing. Okay. I love her channel. Again, because it's that injection of like fun with the really cool engineering, like it, mm-hmm. it just, it never fails to bring a smile to my face. Like the when she turned a Tesla into a truck, like a pickup truck, I was just like, that is genius. I could never do that. And I just love it. I watch all their videos.
I think through making tables, you're working your way up. You can soon convert your Tesla to a truck.
Sure. One day.
Yeah. I mean, that's the dream. Mm-hmm. So I think that concludes our interview. Thank you so much for your time and your insights. You can find the link to Dr. Becky's channel in the link in the... Oh, sorry. You can find the link to Dr. Becky's channel in the description below. And any parting words? Any last words for us?
Let's think. You're the future of science, all of you out there that love science at the minute. So I can't wait to see what you guys do in the future and be bumping into you all at science conferences all around the world where we can all travel again.
Oh, thank you. That's so sweet. Thank you. So great. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.